Yeah. It's not difficult for me to say I love you. It wouldn't be difficult if you would say the same. And believe me when I tell you that I know you very well. I know you'd like to know my name. I think that I have met you somewhere in my dreams. I mean, never have met you at all. And I know you must be thinking, what a silly girl. I know your every thought and scheme. I wake up to the feeling each morning. I go to bed to it at night. I know you. I love you.
And that was, of course, Julie Andrews singing I Know You, I Love You from the seminal musical I Wake Up to This Feeling Every Morning by Rodgers and Hammerstein. What a classic.
I knew you were going to say Rodgers
what
and Hammerstein.
What a classic. Well, I mean, just a real, just an old school show tune classic.
I want to thank you for giving me the gift of not saying Andrew Lloyd Webber in your joke because I hate him. But, I mean, I don't hate him as a person.
Right. I mean, right. You kind of do. He has that wig. He wears a lot of makeup. It's all very weird.
His eyes. Anyways, that was the number one played song, according to Spotify, on my Spotify for 2019.
2019. Okay, yeah. I love it.
It was Chaka Khan. What was it called? The number one song. It was I Know You, I Live You.
Great.
I Know You, I Live You.
Hi, Sister Twain.
Oh, hi, Brother Coffee.
How are you?
I wasn't talking about the song, but that's okay. You guys, Chaka Khan's the greatest.
Yeah. I mean, I support that. She's got those legs.
She's black.
We love black people.
Anyway.
So, welcome to Hot Drinks.
Thanks.
What is Hot Drinks?
Thanks for welcoming me. Well, so there's this thing. Imagine if you didn't have eyeballs.
Okay.
And there was a movie playing.
Okay.
It's like that.
Oh. It's a PCast, as some of our friends like to call
it. Our friends.
And by our friends, I mean Nick Offerman and Megan Mullally, who started their own podcast this week. We always call ours the pod. Mm-hmm. They call theirs the PCast.
The PCast.
Which I kind of like better.
And I think that neither of us are like Nick Offerman, but we're both so much like Megan Mullally.
And And one of the ways that we are like Megan Mullally is I want Nick Offerman to hold my throat as he pins me down and as he tells me what a piece of shit I am and spits in my face.
We need to put a trigger warning on this episode.
Trigger warning.
Yeah.
We might have some new gentle listeners. Why do you sing a song, Sister Twain? What is this? Is this a musical podcast?
It's not. I mean, it turns into that when my organs tell me.
Why do you sing a song?
So
here's
the thing. So, okay. So when we started this, we were a few episodes in and we were like, oh man, I wish we had like a theme song.
If only we had a fan who was a songwriter, Maggie Gyllenhaal.
We would start each episode with, oh, geez, I wish we had a theme song.
Right.
And then I just started singing.
Yeah. And so that's what we do now.
And I think maybe the first song, and I'm going to go back and listen as a fun project.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first song that we did was Proud Mary.
Was it?
Tina and
Ike's
version.
I think you're right.
Version.
Did it have something to do with the theme of that episode?
Yeah.
One of the gentle listeners
changed,
can tell
us. We changed the words a little bit. And then after that, I was like, I'm just going to sing songs.
It was just karaoke night for you every week. Well, so I'm Brother Jack Coffee.
And
this
I'm,
is Sister
I'm a professional,
Latter-day Twain.
Professional singer.
And this is Hot Drinks. It's a podcast or a PCast or a pod, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
We talk about Mormons. We talk about...
being ex-Mormon.
We talk about post-Mos, Kermos, Progmos.
We talk about post-marriage, Ker-marriage. Marriage.
We talk about moms, meaning our own mothers, and also moms, mixed orientation
marriages.
Because we were both in
one of those.
Not to each other.
No, dear God.
You were of the regular orientation. I was of the mixed up orientation. Just kidding. They're both regular.
Oh my God. I was like, what's happening?
So anyway, that's our podcast.
Yeah.
And that's what we talk about.
And we're both 44. You're 42.
I'm 42.
Sorry.
God damn it.
I'm 44. But
whatever,
you guys, I look fantastic. And
you
my pussy
do look great.
Is tight. But you don't know that from personal experience.
I don't, and I never want to know that from personal experience. I know that from you telling it to me once every 7 to 10 business days. but I don't know it from personal experience. So one thing we like to do at the beginning of each pod, of each PCast,
yeah,
is we like to cover some women's work, okay, which is our housekeeping.
Right.
So what do we have for housekeeping this week?
We used to call it housekeeping, but then we're like, let's be real. It's women's work. So, yeah. So I took my Zoloft right before we started. So there's the first item of business.
Great. Great. I took all of my depression meds this morning like a good person.
How many do you have?
I take two pills for my mental health. And I take one pill for my cholesterol because I'm going to die of a heart attack, my doctor tells me.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, fingers crossed, from his lips to God's ears.
I remember you talking about that. He was real disappointed the last time he saw you.
He was pissed.
Yeah. And it just so happens that tonight we're drinking spiked eggnog.
Right, which is great for your heart.
Good thing you've got those meds. What other women's work? Oh, I had a performance of a brief waltz tonight.
Oh, yes.
A brief waltz in a little room, which is a immersive theater piece that's happening at Urban Arts Gallery. Written by Cindy, a.k.a. Morag Shepherd, who a friend of mine, who used to be a BYU acting professor of mine, and she's left the church and everything. She's about 11 years older than me, and you know her as well.
I do.
She said, you know, I have so much respect for her, speaking of Morag / Cindy.
Mm-hmm.
She has got to be the most, not just prolific writer, as far as playwrights in the area, but she's putting out work constantly, yeah, producing work.
She's the most produced playwright in Utah for sure.
And then she's got her own theater company that she runs with a colleague, and they are putting out stuff right and left.
Right.
It's quite an honor to know her.
She's an amazing person.
She told me last night, here's another item of business, that at least 6 to 8 times since we've been friends, she's told me a personal deep story, and I've just been like, okay, cool, and changed the subject to me.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Listen, we've all been there. Actually, I don't know if I have, but.
Do you have any women's work?
Well, you have another women's work. What are we doing next Saturday? You were supposed to cover that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Is it next Saturday?
Yes, goddammit. Isn't it? What's today? Oh, no. Maybe it's like in 2 Saturdays. Because today's like the 7th. It's on the 20th.
Okay, so yeah. Okay.
Yeah, oh, so it's in 2 Saturdays.
Yeah. So in 13 days. In 13 days. 13's a great number. That's how many years I was married. We are having a hot drinks holiday party called, what is it called?
A Very Dolly Christmas.
Or just a Dolly Christmas.
Oh, okay,
a Dolly Christmas. Yeah, I didn't put Very on the
Evite. Are we fighting now?
God damn it. And by Dolly Christmas, what we mean is we've decided that Dolly Parton is the Holy Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, CJ and Kendrick is our Lord and Savior.
Right. Who's God the Father? We don't even know yet. Or we hate the patriarchy, so we don't need a God the Father.
We're going to choose a Heavenly Mother.
We need a Lord and Savior, and we need a Holy Ghost.
Right.
And Dolly whispers in our ear.
She's everywhere.
Oh, she is.
Yeah. We're going to listen to Dolly Christmas music all night. I am going to procure a microphone and sing songs and tell stories.
Sister Twain really wants this night to be about her. She's like, where can I find a microphone? Because at the party, I want to sing songs and tell stories. And I want to sit in the corner and hold and tamp down my anxiety. So that's what I'll be doing.
At least you got a thumb to suck on.
Okay.
You know, like a baby.
I know.
Not a sexual thing.
Okay.
Unless you want it to be.
Also in women's work. So if you want to come to that party, let us know. You should respond.
Oh, yeah. In our Instagram, which is Hot Dranks with an A, there is a link in our bio for Eventbrite. Eventbrite invitation where you can RSVP.
Oh, I didn't know we had an Eventbrite. We're so fancy.
Don't mess with me.
Okay.
Don't even front.
A friendly reminder that we give each week is if you want to support the podcast, we have a Patreon. It's www.patreon.com/hotdrinks. If you've been meaning to donate, go right now and donate.
Yes.
Stop the pod and just go in right now. And basically what the Patreon is you sign up to give us a small amount of money each month to help us produce the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get special bonuses like extra episodes or vlogs or
newsletters.
Or gifts in the mail. We have a really cool gift this month, and I don't want to spoil what it is, but it is our sponsor. It is from our sponsor this month, who we will be talking about next week, assuming we mail the gifts out this week.
Right.
You guys, Cindy doesn't do any of this shit. You'd think Cindy would be in charge of mailing this because she's like our assistant.
Apparently she's busy with other things.
She's busy writing the play.
But like sometimes the sponsor might be my pelvic region because you might get some of my pubes.
Oh God.
Well, you're the one who made that up. You're the one who had that in the idea several months ago. Do you hear how high my voice is right now?
Listen, I just want people to sign up. I don't want them to think, if I sign up for this, I'm going to get pubes in the mail. But I guess I did make that joke.
Yeah, you
no,
did.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Jesus
I apologize.
Christ. We'll braid them at least.
Another segment we like to cover at the opening is, how's Sister Volva? That's your sister. How is Sister Volva?
So here's the thing. I'm really embarrassed, but more so I feel Mormon shame and guilt.
Right.
So if you are of the... God damn it. Whichever, not the highest kingdom.
The people that get the vlog, whatever
the people
they
that get the vlog on the Patreon.
On the Patreon.
Yeah. You saw Sister Volva telling the most epic, hilarious story about the guy who can't go down unless he's in love.
Right.
Well, apparently.
It's a children's fable. My grandma used to tell that to us when we were kids.
Your German grandmother.
My German grandma.
Anyway, apparently that interaction with that dude has continued and gotten a lot better. And I have some Marco Polos of hers to watch that are 3 to 4 weeks old. And I am a piece of shit because I have not watched them. And here's why. I don't know the reason, but Marco Polo gives me such massive anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah. You click play and you see that like the line is barely moving and you know it's going to be 45 minutes long.
And it's like always a great story. And
sure.
And it's like you feel connected to that person for listening. I don't want to pick it apart. I have no idea why. But it's my goddamn sister and I haven't listened. So I don't have a Volva update.
Okay. Well, here's what I would recommend, if I may.
Oh.
I know you weren't asking for advice.
Oh.
But what I love to do when I listen to long Marco Polos is put headphones in and listen to it like while you're folding the laundry or while you're loading the dishwasher or while you're sweeping the floor, like something that is kind of a mindless task.
Yeah.
And you could just, you don't have to sit and stare at your phone. You can set your phone on the counter. You've got your headphones in. I mean, I assume you have Bluetooth headphones, right? What are we, poor people?
I don't.
Or you put your phone in your
yes.
pocket if you have regular headphones.
Yeah.
And you just listen while you do other tasks.
Okay.
That makes it easier.
That just means I have to choose my sister over Rupert Everett in The Man in the High Castle.
Is that, because you're listening to that?
I'm watching it. I like hold it as I sweep the floor. I hold my phone and watch it as I sweep the floor.
Seems complicated.
It's worth it.
Okay.
Rupert Everett in a Nazi uniform? Oh my God.
Is that hot?
Well, it's a uniform.
All right. Well.
Anyways.
With that note, let's take a little break.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to tell what our top five is? We're doing a top five this week, just in case you're wondering.
So this was inspired by, okay, when we had our mock therapy session.
Right.
And one day we will have a real one with Philip Seymour Hoffman
right.
whenever she comes back to town.
With me. This was the mock therapy
right.
session 3 or 4 episodes ago where Sister Twain asked me questions about the
yeah.
trauma in
and
my
we,
childhood.
And, we call,
and I
our,
denied that there was trauma in my childhood.
And it was our second sharing time episode.
Right.
But one of the things that has stayed with me and I think about each and every day since then is the look on your face when you really verbalized to me for the first time or the second or third and I just hadn't listened before because apparently I talk about myself.
I had verbalized it many times before and you'd be like, anyway, here's a story about a threesome I was in.
And you talked about how your coming out was by default and it was not heroic. And any time someone tells you how brave and courageous you are, it makes your, what did you say, your insides like twist or your stomach
I've blocked
writhe.
That. I've blocked that night
you
out
said,
of my memory.
You just said something like, that literally makes me sick to my stomach.
Probably, yeah.
And so I thought, let's do a top five about things we did that we really believe were courageous or brave.
So Sister Twain texted me this topic while I was at work today, and I was like, okay, great. And I was actually on a break, so I started kind of writing some ideas down. And then I was like, fuck, this is like deep. And then I texted her and I was like, I'm having a lot of feelings. And she's like, what's happening? And I said, I don't like thinking nice things about myself. It's making me incredibly uncomfortable. Because when you think of things that you've done heroic or that are brave, you, mm-hmm. they're like usually good things about yourself.
Yeah.
And that made me really uncomfortable because I don't like to think nice things about myself.
Yeah. But I gave you lots of rope.
I did.
I said it could be something silly like me admitting that I really hate Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Is that one of your five?
That was brave. No, it wasn't. But it was one of the braver things I've done as a theater person.
Even Sweeney Todd?
That's Sondheim.
We're back.
All right. So.
So top five.
Things that we feel like we were brave when we did.
Top five times we. That was, you said that so well. Top five times we felt courageous.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Hey, what's your number one?
My numéro un.
It just doesn't have the same ring as numéro trois.
Numéro trois.
Yeah.
Was, okay, so for the gentle listeners who don't know, because maybe they haven't listened to all our episodes
right.
and like whatever.
It's fine. You can jump in anytime.
I'm from Louisiana.
Right.
And when I was like 9 or 10 or 11. And okay.
Sometime between the age of 9 and 17.
I have to preface with this. All but two of my elementary school teachers were black women.
Okay.
And in fifth grade, I gave my black Southern Baptist teacher a Book of Mormon.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, God. Okay, okay.
And I was so self-congratulatory.
You were the... What were those things? Remember in the Ensign where they would have like those like stories of like little miracles that happened in people's lives? They were called like Mormon stories or anyway, I don't remember.
Are you talking about Light the World?
No. We hate that
No,
shit.
We do. I don't know. But anyway, so look, it wasn't lost on me that Mormons were rare in Louisiana.
Right.
And it's also not lost on me that... Okay, no, let me go back. As a young girl, it was lost on me.
It wasn't lost on me. Hold on, let me go back. It was lost on me.
The very deeply rooted Southern Baptist culture that these women came from.
Right.
Whether they, you know, believed or not. And, you know, in Louisiana, it's kind of not okay to say you're an atheist.
Right. It was a cultural thing as much as a
spiritual
sure. thing.
Yeah. And there I was, this white bitch.
This
thinking,
redheaded, white
believing,
bitch. Pasty, white skin.
Believing the words of Brigham Young that Mormons are peculiar people.
Did someone put you up to this? Like, was it like a lesson in Sunday school where someone was like, you should all find someone to share a Book of Mormon?
Oh, of course.
Or do you think it was just something that you kind of came up with on your own?
You know, we were constantly being challenged.
Yeah, of course.
Challenged.
Right.
That was like, right?
Yeah, oh, totally.
The word challenge is one of the words. Constantly being challenged to do missionary work. And I was living in fucking Louisiana.
Right.
And so it was a heavy burden on us. And like, it was probably around that time that I had a Sunday school teacher who said to me, in the next life, the people that you didn't share the gospel with will come up to you and ask you, why didn't you ever tell me? And that hit me right in this. It pierced me into this quick.
It's so, like, I remember hearing that same idea too.
Yeah.
And first of all, what a horrible thing to say to a child. And second of all, get the fuck over yourself. it's just, I mean, I know that Mormons think they're like the gospel shit. Like,
oh my God.
they're the coolest and the best of all the religions.
In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.
Amen.
Yeah.
But like, just to think that people are going to be like, why, sweet sister?
Exactly.
Why? Why? You knew the truth and you didn't tell me.
Why didn't you
why
tell
not,
me?
Why not, sweet sister? Fuck you.
And so I don't know what the impetus was for me to share it with my teacher. I've blocked a lot of that out.
Okay, good.
But that was pretty ballsy.
Do you remember what she said?
She was very gracious.
Of course, because she's like an elementary school teacher.
Yes.
And she's probably have kids give her like a cup full of boogers before. And she would be like, thank you, Johnny. Go back to your seat.
Yeah. But I remember she was probably the most intimidating of all of my teachers.
Okay.
And so to give it to her, I don't know if it was like this subconscious like thing in me. Like if I can give a Book of Mormon to this teacher.
To this lady.
Yeah. Then I can do anything.
What if you found out that she was Mormon now? Wouldn't you be so fucking mad?
I would probably need to get on a plane and go visit her. Like, she wouldn't remember
You look
me.
Her up on Facebook and she's like, hashtag light the world, bitches. You know, she's like, today I wrote a positive Yelp review for a restaurant I like. Hashtag light the world.
You know, here's the thing. She probably would remember me. So even though this was fifth grade and like in fifth grade, so I was 11.
Yeah, 10, 11. Yeah.
And I'm 44 now. Right. So that was 33 years ago.
That's a long time ago.
Did you guys understand that? That was 33 years ago. Fuck yourself. We had a project that year where we had to do a poster drawing the Indian elephant on one side and drawing the African elephant on the other and detailing all their differences. And I did a real half-assed job and she pulled me out into the hall to talk to me privately. And that's where paddlings happened.
Right.
We got paddled.
Right.
I never did because I was a good at two-shoes. She pulled me out in the hall to say, Ashley.
Sister Twain.
You can do so much better than that. What's going on? And I thought that was really sweet. And you know what? She let me do it over.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I had it. I was really proud of it.
And
I
then
wish
you
I...
said, here's a Book of Mormon.
Anyway, what's your number one?
So the...
While you say it, I'm going to go to the bathroom because I don't really care. I just want to come about myself.
Okay, so it's interesting that I said that I did not think coming out was courageous because apparently like 19 of the stories I've chosen to tell tonight are about coming out. So there were moments of courage apparently within that. I know.
Yeah.
But I also want to say this. It was kind of depressing to reflect back on these moments of courage because it reminded me of like being a new baby gay and I was like so
hopeful.
Excited and hopeful. And I just like the world was my oyster
and now you're
or
an
butthole
alcoholic.
As it was. And now I'm a sad alcoholic and I have,
you have this
no
stupid
hope.
Podcast.
No hope. Yeah, this podcast is all I have. Anyway. Okay, so story time.
Yeah.
So when I was first in the process of coming out, I was going to therapy. I had a hot gay therapist.
Oh, yeah, you wanted him to love you.
I did. And that's a whole other Oprah. Yeah. But I was going to therapy and I was, you know, working through some stuff and figuring things out. I also was like physically active. It sounds weird, but I was like jogging.
You went to the gym and shit.
I jogged a lot.
Okay.
So anyway, so I was jogging through a park in Salt Lake. It was summertime, so it was like nice weather outside.
Uh-huh.
And I was jogging through this park. And this man was jogging towards me. And I did what I always did, which was avoid eye contact.
Mm-hmm.
And then in my head, because I was going to therapy at the time, and so I was kind of like mentally aware and kind of like, you know, kind of working on growth, I recognized that I had been avoiding eye contact with men my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was in the closet, my greatest fear was that I would make eye contact with a man and he would make eye contact back with me. And then he would, I don't even know, like I would, like if he tried to flirt with me or if he tried to talk with me, that like somehow I would, that would somehow like reveal this great secret that I'd been keeping for 37 years that I was gay.
Jesus
and
Christ.
So I had trained myself to never make eye contact with a man because of the fear of like what might happen if he spoke to me or made eye contact back or whatever, or flirted, or I don't even know. Like, I don't even know what I was scared of, but I knew that I was safer if I never made eye contact with men.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just remember I was jogging in the park. I can see it in my mind, like as clear as day. I was jogging in a park and there was a guy jogging towards me and I pointed my eyes to the ground. And then all this went through my head really quickly. Like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, why do you do this? And I realized why I was doing it. And I was like, oh, like, it's okay. Like, I can make eye contact with him now because I'm not keeping a secret anymore.
Uh-huh.
And if he does flirt back or whatever. I mean, hello, we're jogging past each other in the park. No one was flirting with anyone.
Right.
But like just in my head, I just thought, oh, like, if he makes eye contact back with me, it's okay, because it won't reveal the greatest, deepest, darkest secret I have. Mm-hmm. And so I made eye contact with him. And it felt really brave at the time.
And that's it?
And then
that's
we,
your thing?
Yeah, and then we dated for 7 years.
You made love.
No, we didn't. No, I never saw him again. But...
I'm proud of you.
Well, thank you. It was 5 years ago when I had hope. I don't make eye contact anymore. Actually, that's not true. But it felt, in the moment, it felt like an incredibly brave thing to do.
Oh.
Mine are all going to be this depressing, just so you know.
Depressing.
Let's take a break.
Okay.
We're back.
Hey, it's me, Sister Twain.
Hey, it's me, Brother Coffee. When Sister Twain sent me this topic, I said, but that seems so positive and so hopeful. Are we losing our edge?
And I was just like, yeah, we are. This is the beginning of the end.
But turns out I told a really fucking depressing story, so it's fine. So we're still depressing.
All right.
Don't worry, I can take any positive topic and make it about how I'm a piece of shit. What's your number two?
My numéro deux.
You going to do French on all of them?
Should
I do Italian?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't remember Italian.
You don't remember number one in Italian?
Numero uno. Numero due.
Oh my God, I love it when you do Italian.
Okay, we'll keep going. Anyway.
Anyways.
Your numero due.
Anyway, okay. I have told gentle listeners the story in person and acted it out for them even, but I've never talked about... Sorry, dropping the phone.
It's fine. Okay, okay. You guys, it's fine. We're professionals.
I've acted it out in settings for entertainment purposes.
Right.
But it's my first threesome.
Okay.
And it makes it sound like, you know, if I have a first, then I have many. But I have exactly... three. I've been involved in only three threesomes.
Did you know I was in I had a threesome?
Yeah, with a married couple.
Yeah, it was great.
Hot.
I missed that. That was fun. Back when I had hope. Anyway.
Okay, so.
We believed Obama could be president. I believed I could have threesomes. Hope. Hashtag hope. Anyway.
So, okay. I'm not going to say who it was, but that's part of the bravery, but I cannot say who.
Fair.
But it was a married couple as well.
Okay.
It wasn't their first time.
Really? I don't think I knew that part.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They had actually had foursomes.
Oh, okay. Congratulations.
Yeah, that just God sounds so goddamn complicated.
It's a lot.
Anyways, so...
I feel like, I mean, I have never been in a multiple sex partner activity with different genders.
Okay.
But I feel like when everyone's the same gender, it's easier.
Oh, I would imagine. I haven't had that experience.
Yeah, there's just like, y'all know what bits and bobs to rub.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, oh, exactly.
Anyway. So I just think
like you have two people speaking Japanese and one person speaking German.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's a little more complicated.
Yeah,
you can still get understood.
Yeah.
Fräulein. But yeah.
They're really similar languages.
But when everyone's speaking Japanese.
Easy peasy.
So,
There is a history with this couple, and it's not a romantic or a sexual history, just that I had known them for about 20 years.
These were not just strangers off the street.
Right.
This was not perfect strangers.
Right. It was not Balky.
It was not Balky and Cousin Larry.
Yeah. God damn. Neither of them.
You wouldn't have a threesome with Balky and Cousin Larry?
Stop it.
You wouldn't?
Right now. No.
I would.
Okay.
Anyway.
Wow. Listen. To you. Okay, so...
Gentle listeners, please write in and tell us if you'd have a threesome with Balky and Cousin Larry.
So anyways, they took me to dinner for my 40th birthday.
Uh-huh.
And...
Macaroni Grill?
Yes!
Was it really?
Yes!
Oh my God. And the waiter wrote their name with a crayon on the table upside down.
It.
Anyway, I'm
just
sorry.
Stop.
Keep interrupting.
It.
Go
it's
ahead.
Such
Keep
good
going.
Food.
Keep going.
So then we went to their place afterwards for gin and tonics and to smoke some weed. And we get to this point in the evening where we're so fucking gone, just crossfaded as hell, that we're just talking and standing in the center of the kitchen. And then when I feel like I am about to fall over.
Mm-hmm.
Coupled with, there's something going on here.
Right.
meaning I think they have an idea in their head.
Okay.
It had not been discussed. Right. I just am picking up on a vibe. And I escape immediately and go, guys, I'm going to fall over. I've got to go lay down. So I fucking crash. And I don't know how much time went by. It could have been 2 minutes. It could have been 20 minutes. When I hear the husband, his voice waking me in their living room saying, Sister Twaint. Isn't that so funny?
It would be funny if I said that.
Would you, let's say the wife's name is
Gary.
Gladys. Would you like to come into the bedroom and touch Gladys with me?
And you said, I will get on that midnight train to Georgia. Is that a euphemism for lesbian sex? A midnight train to Georgia?
How are you?
I bet it is.
How are you still working a day job? Anyway, so... So...
You know, I'm going back to five.
I knew I had...
My midnight train to Georgia.
You just keep telling. I'm going to sing in the background.
Okay. I knew I had... a split second to make a decision.
Right.
And I put on my big girl panties.
Right.
Meaning I took off my big girl panties.
Jesus.
And I said, okay. And I got up off the couch and I just walked down the hall following him toward the bedroom, taking off an article of clothing at a time as I'm down the hall. And
on that midnight
and
train
Gladys is already on the bed. Nakey.
Leave it on my midnight train.
And I just get on her.
We're going back to...
Anyway.
I had to be brave.
I can't think of any of the
I
words.
Had to make some split-second brave choices.
Right.
Get up off the couch.
Right.
Well, first say yes. First consent.
Consent. Active and enthusiastic.
You
consent.
Don't have to say yes and to be brave. Sometimes you say no to be brave.
That's fair.
But in this instance, I kind of was like, why not? Go for it. I trust these people. Take off your clothes and get on that bitch.
I just like to think that in 20 years, when people are writing those books about, like, stories of brave women that we read to young girls to teach them about women being brave, that this story about you taking the midnight train to Georgia will be part of that book.
Right after my story of giving my elementary school teacher a Book of Mormon.
It's gonna be really inspiring.
So good.
So my numero due is really depressing.
Of course it is. Surprise.
My number two thing I did that was brave.
Oh God.
Was I found a new home for my dog.
Here we go. Okay, I don't know if I can. I'm gonna walk around.
This is really depressing.
Oh boy.
Okay, so here's the story. So when I got divorced, my kids asked for a dog. And I said yes, because I felt guilty. I actually really felt like maybe this will be good for me. Like I'll go to the dog park. It'll be a good way to meet people. Like I'll have this companion. I thought it would be good for me.
That hope was very detrimental.
And I adopted a dog, and she was a really, really sweet dog. She was so sweet and so loving and so wanted my attention. And the fact that she really loved me was really difficult for me because I don't like things that love me. But that's neither here nor there. The main challenge, well, there were two main challenges with the dog.
Yeah.
Number one, she was never really housebroken.
Not really fully, completely, no.
I think that she had had a very traumatic life before she came to live with me. Oh. Like, there was a lot of evidence that she had been really severely abused in her life before she came to me. And I really think, like, if I'm really honest with myself, like, I don't think she was a great dog for me. Like, she would have been a great dog for someone who was more experienced with dogs. And this is the first dog I've ever owned, other than when I was, like, a kid and we had dogs as a family.
Yeah.
This was the first pet I'd ever owned as an adult. And so I think she would have been a really amazing dog for someone who knew a little bit more about how to navigate dogs and how to, like, you know, whatever.
Mm.
But she was not ever really housebroken, and that was really hard. And when I first got her, I owned the home that I lived in. And then I moved into a rental property. And so that became more of an issue because, you know, if she was, you know, going to the bathroom in the house, which I fully recognize was a lot of her trauma and whatever.
Yeah.
And then the second part of it is, again, when I lived in a home, I had a dog door. I had a big backyard.
Big
she
backyard.
Could kind of come and go, you know, kind of run around. And then I moved into a much smaller apartment where I don't have a yard. And she was she's a big dog. And so I would kennel her when I went to work because I didn't want her to go to the bathroom in the house because she wasn't great at not doing that. And then it just became very complicated because I would get off work, but then I had to go get the kids. But then we needed to get home to like let her out because I didn't want her to spend her whole day in the kennel. And it was it became a really bad situation, both for me because I felt a lot of stress and anxiety about her. And then also I think for her because she was not living, like she didn't have a great life. She was in this kennel most of the time.
Yeah.
You know, and I would try to walk her when I got home and whatever. But also like I have three kids and we were busy. And so sometimes I wouldn't walk her and, you know, and I just, anyway, it was rough. I felt bad all the time because I felt like I wasn't taking care of her the way she needed to be taken care of.
Yeah.
And so I just made the decision to find a new home for her.
Yeah.
And it sucked. And my kids were really mad at me.
Yeah.
And my kids still bring it up to this day.
Oh.
And, you know, and like pull up old photos of her and cry about missing her. And I feel like a piece of shit every time they do. But I also like, I really know in that moment, like that was the right thing both for me and for her.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she hopefully is in a much better place now where she can, you know, where she's got more space and she's got someone that really knows how to like take care of her and connect with her. Because I just think, you know, here she was spending so much time in a kennel and it was kind of depressing.
Right.
And I felt bad.
Yeah.
Anyway. It was just a reminder that sometimes as a parent, you have to make like a shitty decision that your kids are going to be mad about, but you have to do it anyway because you know that it's the right decision.
Yep. Yeah, no, I hear you. That does take some bravery. I agree.
And it sucked.
Yeah.
Anyway, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I don't want to talk about it.
Sister Twain loved that dog.
I did.
She was a really sweet, wonderful dog. And I hope that she has found happiness in her new environment, in her new home.
Fida R. Snow.
Oh, that was Fida R. Snow.
Yeah, she wrote poetry about the saints.
Was she here when we first started recording this podcast?
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, my God. Anyway, she's not here anymore. Godspeed, Fida R. Snow.
Go to break.
Go to break.
Please.
Remember when I was afraid this episode would be too, like, uplifting and hopeful?
Well, I think we're going to be good.
It's real fucking
depressing. We're going to be good.
So numero tre?
Oh, there you go.
Italiano.
I love it so much. You know, you're great, Brother Coffee.
Thanks. Anyway. You are too. Anyway.
Thanks for giving 2 years to the Lord.
I did. In Italy, where I didn't convert anyone except a Nigerian man who bore his testimony after we baptized him about how he had to flee and then he had to murder someone. But now he was back in the ward. This is a true story. We baptized him. He disappeared for 2 months. Then he came back and bore his testimony about how someone was trying to kill him, and so he had to kill them. So that's the only person that I baptized on my mission in Italy. And then also later we found out he had multiple wives. This is all true.
How?
We were just talking to him, and he said something about his wives, and we were like, your wives? Is this in English? Like, we're not understanding. He's like, no, I have three wives. And we were like, cool. You're a baptized member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Anyway, then he murdered someone and then he disappeared again. So who knows? He's probably dead by now. At least he went to heaven because we baptized him.
Oh, at least. My numéro trois is the two times I told my ex-husband Gary that I wanted a divorce.
Yes.
The first time was at the 5-year mark. The second time was at the 11-year mark.
Jesus. And I can't believe he didn't take that out in the 5-year mark.
What do you mean?
We'll keep talking and then I'll share.
And to clarify, to make sure everyone's clear, we didn't divorce till the 13th year.
Right. Right.
So, I mean...
Can I give a little background?
Yeah.
Just for people who might be new listeners. So,
sure. You
were married to a gay man.
Yes.
And you knew he was gay from before you got married.
Yes.
But because you were Mormon, you felt like this was your burden to bear and like it was going to be okay and you could fix it.
Oh, yeah.
You could work through it.
All of the above.
And I also was a gay man. Still am.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was married to a straight woman.
Yes.
So very similar circumstances.
Very.
So when I say, like, I can't believe he didn't take that out.
What do you mean, take it out?
Like you said to him, like, let's end this marriage.
Uh-huh.
And he said no.
Right.
And that, I mean, I don't know what I would have done if Tisha had said to me 5 years into our marriage, like, we need to end this marriage.
Uh-huh.
But I feel like it's surprising to me that he didn't think, oh, this is my chance to get out of this and not even be the bad guy because you're the one that asked for the divorce.
Right.
You know, like, it's just, I mean, again, I don't know where his head was, but it just seems like to say no to that, like, no, we've got to stick this out.
Right.
Surprises me.
Yeah. I mean, he just, that's how, A, super duper in the church he was.
Right.
And B, how much he hated himself because it came out later that the biggest thing, even bigger than the church and him being married to me and having a nuclear family with the children and all that, was that he didn't feel that the gay community would be accepting of him because he didn't feel attractive enough.
Oh.
Right. He just kind of saw
Jesus.
That. I know. That no, he really thought that way. But anyway, yeah. So to be able to tell
him. I mean, same, but.
But to be able to say that with small children, as a Mormon woman, to my husband who's closeted, who did not like to talk about being gay. We did not like to talk about it.
Right. You didn't talk about, like, which celebrities you thought were hot?
Rarely. I mean, rarely, because he did not want to talk about it. When you're trying to keep something closeted,
yeah.
You know, you do as much as you can to act like it's not there, even though we were both, it was always the elephant in the room.
It was there, yeah.
Elephant with a big old dick in the room. So to be able to say that, I had to be really brave.
You totally did.
And no,
to say it again a second time when he had already told you no once.
Right. And the first time he did not act well. He did not react well at all. He went through the many phases of grief. I guess the first one, both times was anger. And Jesus. So at the 5 years, I knew him well enough. Before the first time I said it at the 5 year mark, I knew him well enough to know that the anger would be his first line of defense or however you want to say it. But to just to say you want a divorce as a Mormon woman and someone with small children, even if you think your husband might take it well, is really scary.
Yeah, for sure.
But anyway, we didn't get divorced either of those times, so. That's all I really have to say.
I just want to say one tiny thing about this, and then I'll share my numero tres. Are we on three?
Yeah.
So, Mormons, if you're listening, Comos, Currentmos, Kermos, if you're listening, this is a religion. Like, imagine how awful that would be to be in a marriage where neither partner is sexually attracted to the other one, where one partner is asking for a divorce multiple times and the other partner is responding with anger.
Mm-hmm.
Like, imagine living in that marriage and doing it because the church told you to.
Mm.
And I mean, the church probably maybe didn't explicitly say to Gary, your ex-husband, you should marry a woman. I don't know. Maybe they did.
Maybe they did.
Because a lot of gay men did have had that experience. Yeah. But like, as gay men, many of us were socialized to believe that our way out was to get married.
It was with your only recourse.
With no thought or worry for the woman who we were dragging into that lie.
Yeah.
But like, that's what the church teaches people to do.
Yeah.
Is to enter these horrible, shitty, awful marriages.
Yeah.
Where there is like intense damage and harm done to all parties involved, children, spouses, extended family
and
members.
And zero chance in hell for fulfillment of either partner.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, cheers.
Okay.
Enjoy. Go ahead and get your tithing check written and send it out on its way. Okay, so my number three, Jesus, I keep forgetting what they are because I keep changing them. Okay. There's not a lot to say about this one.
Oh.
I need to do some processing about how I don't think coming out was brave, but literally all my stories involve some part of my coming out process as times I felt brave.
Right.
Anyway, I felt brave.
Okay.
The first time I sucked a dick.
Yay! I love this one. Okay. Go ahead. I have a question. Should I ask it first or?
Sure. Ask it.
Did you love it?
Yes.
Once you got it in your mouth, were you like, this is amazing?
I mean, yes.
Okay.
With conditions.
A question mark?
I'll
yes.
Well, I mean, it's kind of weird the first time you do it.
Oh, sure.
It's like big and it's hard and you're like not sure where to put your mouth.
Dicks are so weird at first in the best way.
And it's like gagging you. Uh-huh. And like, anyway, so it's complicated.
You're saying all kinds of magical things.
Anyway, I have alluded in the past, but the first person that I ever like kissed or had any like sexual experiences with was not a healthy relationship. It was a rather fucked up relationship.
Oh. Have you ever told me about this?
Maybe. We'll talk about it offline.
Okay.
I'll give you the brief version of it. Anyway, so it was this guy and we had gone out a couple times. Maybe this was like the second time we'd gone out. But at this point we had already kissed and we had like held hands and kind of cuddled and all that stuff. And then I remember I had driven him back to his car. And so we were in my car and we were like kind of making out and whatever.
Were you so nervous?
I mean, I don't remember being like crazy nervous.
Okay.
But we were just making out and it was great. And then I just was like, I'm going to put that dick in my mouth.
Wait, did he have it out? Did you have your hand down his pants? Or?
Probably, yeah. Okay. I don't remember specifically. I don't think it was out. I think I probably was like rubbing it over his clothes or putting my hand out of his pants. And then I was just like, I'm just going to undo his pants and put that in my mouth. And it just felt very brave.
So Mary Tyler Moore of
isn't
you.
It? Nothing's gonna stop me now. Was that the Mary Tyler Moore theme song?
Sure.
Anyway. So, I mean, I don't have a lot of, like, specifics to say about it. But, like, it just was like, I mean, when you grow up your whole life thinking that, like, you can never do any of that and you can never touch a man that way and you can never think about it. Yeah. And then one day to just be like, I'm just going to put it in my mouth.
Oh.
It just felt kind of courageous.
Good for you.
It's kind of great.
You
anyway.
Got through the bullshit in your head.
I did.
And you did.
Which is shocking. Isn't that shocking?
Yes. Yes.
I can't believe I did it.
But.
And that, I just want to say, that's not the only time I've done it. I've done it many times since then.
Right.
But I made the first time. I was making it sound like that was the only time that had happened. But no, it was just the first time with
like
a shitty person
time.
Who treated me like
Aww.
Shit. Whatever, it's fine.
Anyway,
I'm sure it's had no impact on my psyche at all.
Let's take a break.
Siamo tornati.
Excuse me?
That means we're back in Italian.
Oh, I thought it meant like dick in my mouth.
That would be cazzo nella mia bocca.
Cazzo?
Cazzo, that means dick.
Is that like slang?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh.
I don't know. I learned Italian on my mission as
cazzo
an LDS missionary.
Cazzo della mia?
Nella mia.
Nella mia.
Which means in my.
Cazzo. Nella mia
bocca. When I was in college, I have a friend, and we taught him in Italian to say, sono ben dotato come un elefante.
Which means bend over and get my elephant dick.
It means, close. It means I'm hung like an elephant.
Oh!
And here's the funny thing.
Okay, what?
He is hung like an elephant.
Who is it? Do I know him?
Yeah, you do. We talked about him the other night. What? We'll talk about it offline.
Is it our gentle listener friend named Gary that we like to call Bruce?
No.
Anyways, okay.
No, I know nothing about how dotato he is.
Okay, but number four.
So what's your numero quattro?
Numero quattro for me, pour moi, is after my divorce.
Okay.
When I had only had sex with the gay.
Okay.
I had only had gay dick up in me.
Right. Gary's gay dick.
Yeah.
This is the name of my one-man play. premiering at the Edinburgh Fringe this year. Gary's gay dick. Anyway.
I flew out to New York City.
Mm-hmm.
To live one of my dreams, which was...
Have straight dick up in you?
To reunite with the man who I thought was the one who got away.
Okay.
And have sex with him. But I also thought I was in love with him, and I thought he was going to be, like, my person.
Right, right.
Yeah, so he was...
Flashbacks to my story from last time, where I was like, this is the guy. We're going to save each other.
Oh, we didn't save each other. Oh, dear God, yeah, anyway, I'm sorry.
It's fine, it's fine.
So, yeah, but the bravery part was me getting on a plane and going to New York City, knowing I'm going to have sex. Like something that I consider to be something like the real sacred. The real thing.
Yes.
The real thing.
A gift that Jesus has given unto us.
And here, look, people, like, it was the sex part was the real thing because I was with a straight man who desired my body. That right. was not in right. question when we were fucking.
Right.
And, but just going out there, and I remember how fucking nervous I was all day. Once I got into the city, I had this weird, irrational, like, fear that just being in the city, I was just going to bump into him, like, before we were supposed to meet up.
In New York.
In New York with millions right. and millions and millions. Right. So I'm, like, on the lookout. Is he there? Is he there? Is he there? Right. Is he here? You know, which is dumb. And then we end up meeting at his place that night, and I take a taxi.
Right. Because it's New York.
Oh, my God.
You're an urban gal.
I get on a taxi with my overnight bag because I'm going to stay with him for like 4 or 5 days and go into his building.
Mm-hmm.
I was nervous just to ring the goddamn buzzer.
Mm-hmm.
Get on the elevator, and I am like thinking, I'm shaking. I'm shaking.
Right.
How can I stop shaking before I see him?
Right.
And then get off the elevator, and I thought all of my organs were just going to fall out of my vagina because there's a hole there.
And they're all connected to that. It's just open. There's just open space. And that vagina is just a hole. Yeah. Like anything could slide out.
It's just going to come on out.
It's like carrying around a plastic bag with a hole in the bottom. Womanhood and is so, like carrying a plastic bag around with a hole in the bottom.
And so... And then I get off the elevator and I'm like, there's like maybe 2 or 3 doors on that floor. It was a mm-hmm. tiny building or whatever it was. And I'm like, okay, where is he? And then I hear one of the doors open and he walks out and I'm like,
oh, was he hot? God. Is he hot?
Oh, he's beautiful. Oh,
okay. Beautiful. Does he have a nicer body than Gary?
My ex-husband?
Yeah. Or have you blocked out Gary's body? I know you've blocked out Gary's dick.
I've blocked out anything that has to do with him.
Sister Twain does not remember what Gary's dick looks like.
I don't.
She
don't.
She doesn't. So,
nothing okay. about it. Okay. I really, honestly, truly, honestly,
I mean, I can envision it in my mind's eye. It's got like some salt and pepper pubes. Because Gary has that kind of salt and pepper hair.
He's 40 fucking 8 years old.
I know. We're fucking old.
I know. Anyway, so. But like. It just even the days leading up to it. So I scheduled an appointment to have my legs waxed.
So oh,
and
cute.
My vagina.
It's so cute.
And my armpits.
It's so cute because you're such a whore now. It's so cute that you were so nervous about it. I mean that you're whore in a really loving way.
Yeah, yeah. I'll show my tits at a party.
Right. I just mean like you're so confident now.
Yeah.
And so like comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah, I really
and it's
am.
It's really kind of endearing and adorable that you were so anxious and stressed out about it.
Oh, so stressed out. And then my leg wax job, like it missed just a couple of tiny spots and I freaked out. So the night before my flight to New York, I got Nair.
Oh, Jesus.
And this was the same day I got waxed. Jeez. And I just broke out into hives.
Of course you did. Oh, of course you did.
And I'm like, well, fuck. I'm nervous about like, should my bra and underwear should be matching? Will he be judgy if they're not?
Should they be?
I don't think they give a shit.
Okay.
Yeah. And then just so.
But I get that. Like, if I know I'm going to be getting naked with someone, I want to make sure I have, like, cute underwear on. or underwear that doesn't have like a big hole in the leg, or you know,
right?
Yeah, I get mean, that.
I just like, can I wear like a gray bra and blue undies? Like, I didn't know. Should I get something fancy? And then I'm like, but then he'll think I'm acting like it's our honeymoon or something.
Right.
You know, I don't know what the fuck. So many, like, I didn't know what I was doing. All I knew, I was getting on a plane, going to New York. And then so anyway, so we get in, you know, I get off the elevator, like I said, and there he is. And I am just so nervous that I don't even know if I don't even know what kind of state I was in. We chat for a minute and then we go to dinner. I'm so nervous.
Did you know, then, like, did he know that you were coming there with the intent of having sex?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, you had talked about that.
But he also knew I was in love with him.
Yeah, but this was someone that you had some history with, so yeah. It wasn't okay. Okay.
Yeah. And so, and he also knew I had only had sex with my gay husband.
Right.
And so we go to dinner, and then we get back, and I'm like, okay, so, and I'm thinking in my head, so we're back, and we've got to go to sleep. He works in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting ready for bed, and when I get into bed, we're going to definitely have sex.
You you paused on a word, and I thought you were saying. You were going to say, we prayed.
We have to include the Lord.
Right. You need to pray before and after and sing a hymn, How Firm a Foundation.
And so I just remember like being in the bathroom, brushing my teeth, doing whatever.
Brushing your cooch.
My night routine, whatever.
Right.
And just thinking, I am in uncharted territory.
Right.
And really being like almost outside of myself, watching myself. And then just like, Ashley, when you go out of the bathroom, just put one foot in front of the other towards the bed. Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
How brave. Good job.
Thank you.
And then you had some hot sex. Was it hot? Was it good?
You know, the bitchy part of me wants to say, and it's true, it was fine.
Right.
At the time, it was the most amazing experience.
Right.
The most amazing experience.
Right.
But now I look back and I go, it was just fine.
Okay, good.
It was fine.
Good. So my number four.
How do you say it in Italian?
Numero quattro.
Great.
I want to, it's a fun, lighthearted story because at number five, I'm really going to drag everyone down to the depths of my misery. So number four, again, shortly after I'd come out of the closet. I was with my younger brother and sister, and we were in downtown Provo, which is a city in Utah where the Mormons live. I don't remember what we were doing. Maybe we'd gone to dinner or something, but we were just walking around, like, kind of popping into little shops in sort of the downtown area.
Yeah.
And I went into a shop. We went into a shop that was, like, a clothing and, like, accessory and whatever. And there was this pair of... They're kind of like long johns, but they're like, they have this weird pattern on them, and they're these fitted kind of leggings kind of things, like pajama bottoms kind of, but really tight, like not like straight guy, Old Navy plaid pajama bottoms, tight kind of legging. Anyway, I thought they were really cool looking. I went and tried them on in the fitting room, and I really liked them.
Mm-hmm.
And in my head, I thought, well, can I buy these? Do they look too gay? And then there was this moment where I said, oh, I don't fucking care if they look too gay. Because I'm gay. I'm out of the closet. And so I bought them. Okay. And I still wear them. And I still have them. And I still love them. And I'm sure it kind of traumatizes my children when I wear them. Because they're very unattractive.
I think that really speaks to something because you are afraid of looking too gay in your own home.
Oh, completely. I mean, like, here's the thing. I mean, I've talked about this before. Like, I was conscious of the music that I listened to.
Yeah.
I was conscious of the clothing that I wore. Uh-huh. I mean, I was just conscious of every decision, every thought, every word that I said went through 17 filters in my brain before they exited, before they were visible to the world, because I just needed to do everything I could to protect, to prevent people from figuring out that I was gay, because that would be the literal worst thing that could happen if people figured out that I was gay.
Yeah.
And then I just bought some real faggy pajamas and I didn't care. And it was great. I'm going to wear those pajamas tonight. I love those pajamas.
After 37 years of being so worried.
Isn't that a cute, fun story?
So worried. That is a cute story.
Number five is going to get real depressing.
Okay, I can't wait.
Let's take a break.
Okay.
We're back.
So, Brother Coffee told me that during the break just now, his number five is going to be really depressing, but so is mine.
Oh, good.
This is going to be great.
That's perfect. We're and on right. a real depressing note.
So, my dad was the kind of dad who spanked.
Right.
And among other things, he was ragey.
Right.
Sometimes we would get hit.
Right.
Sometimes he would swear.
Right.
And yell and scream.
And it was some drugs.
It was the ragey screaming that was the worst of all.
Right.
By far. Anyway, so I'm the oldest of all my siblings, oldest of three.
Right. You, vulva, and forearms.
Yes, my brother with the amazing forearms.
He has great forearms, you guys.
He lives in Bend, Oregon.
Bend, Oregon.
So when I was probably three or four, and Sister Vulva was I must have been like five, and Sister Vulva like two. Okay,
right.
So there's a 3 year difference there. And she still slept in a crib.
Mm-hmm.
I think this was before the toddler bed trend.
Right, sure.
And I just got so bored sometimes that I just have to play in her crib just because it was like a change of scenery.
Right.
So I'd just get in her crib and pretend I was in jail or whatever,
right.
You know. Well, I had done that once and it made the crib bottom out.
Oh, okay.
It was a wooden crib.
Right.
Because we grew up in the 1800s,
right.
Apparently.
We were so concerned about safety back then that like extra weight in the crib would cause the crib to collapse.
God! And so I was told, don't you ever do that again, you know?
Right.
Well, I did it again. And it bottomed out.
Mm-hmm.
And when...
With little sister two-year-old Vulva in it?
No.
Oh, okay.
She was playing somewhere else.
Oh, she was
in the house.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought she was like sleeping.
And then
you're
like, bah, 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 bah. No. I wouldn't get in with her. And then it bottomed out, and I just kind of waited for someone to find out.
Right.
When my dad found out my mom wasn't at home, I don't think. And so. When he found out and asked how it happened, I blamed it on Sister Vulva.
Sorry, Sister Vulva.
And even though it was her crib.
Right.
He still, like, spanked her. A lot.
Fuck.
Because that's how he was. He was ragey and abusive.
Right.
She was only two.
Ooh.
She was the sweetest thing. And I felt so bad.
It's so awful.
That I... confessed mm-hmm. that I lied and it was really me.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I felt so bad that I had to say it, but I knew that my dad was going to be very angry with me and spank
right.
me, and he
right.
did.
Right.
Yeah. So that's it. I was brave. I was brave, you
Jesus.
Guys.
I'm so sorry that that happened to you.
Oh, many things like that happened.
I know, but I'm so sorry, and that's terrible that you had to go through
this. I'm well seasoned.
But you have been an amazing, loving daughter to your dad in his sickness.
In his Alzheimer's.
Yeah,
and we haven't even scratched the surface on that.
No.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to be.
I didn't.
No. And you really, like, took him in.
Mm-hmm.
There was a period, and we haven't talked about this a lot on the podcast, where he was living with you?
No.
Living near you?
Very near.
But you were spending a lot of time with him.
Morning till night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you could have been like, fuck you.
Yeah, could
you
have.
You dumb asshole.
I really could have. Yeah.
So I'm sorry that happened to you.
And been totally justified in that choice.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, anyway.
God, let's really end it. I mean, now mine seems like real bitchy and stupid, because yours is real depressing.
That'll be better to end on. Go.
So my number five, there's two stories. The bravery was, this was when I was newly gay, newly out of the closet, and I really wanted to have a group of gay friends.
A gaggle?
A gaggle, as it were, a gaggle of gays. And so I was really trying, and I think at the time, this was not my first therapist that I went to, but I went to a second therapist. And she was very much like, she was very proactive and very kind of challenge oriented. Like she would be like, okay, this month I want you to do this thing that's hard for you. You know, like she would sort of issue these challenges to
me.
Yeah. To like, I remember one month she told me to go on 10 dates month of September.
Oh, wow.
Because she was like, you just need to get over your fear of dating, and what will help you is just going on a lot of dates. Anyway, okay. It ended horribly, but that's a story for another day.
Yeah.
So the courageous thing was two instances where I put myself out there and really tried to like expand my circle of friends. And then I'll tell how it blew up in my face.
Shit.
So one of them. So in the gay community, we love RuPaul's Drag Race. Seriously, what the fuck are my children doing upstairs?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like midnight and they're like loud. I'm like, are they yelling? Are they watching TV? Anyway, so in the gay community, we love RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah.
And there are often like gay bars that host like viewing nights or whatever.
Yeah.
And there was a new season coming out, and I had watched a couple seasons at a bar, but like it, you know, I have a weird job that has weird hours. And so it wasn't always easy for me to get to, you know, whatever. Anyway. So I decided one season of RuPaul's Drag Race that I was going to host a viewing party at my house. And I like had to like pay extra money on my like cable account to get the right channel. And like, and I invited like every gay that I knew, which was not a lot, but I just thought I'm going to host this party. So I invited all these people from just like different social groups and
walks
whatever.
Walks of life.
Didn't necessarily know each other. I invited straight friends, like just a ton of people. And like the first one was like super fun and like lots of people. And we watched the show, and there were some people that had never watched before and some people that were seasoned veterans that like knew all the catchphrases and whatever. Anyway. So I was like, yeah, this is it. I'm putting myself out there. I'm going to meet some new friends. I'm going to meet some people.
So proud of you.
Did you come to one of those? I don't remember.
Yeah. And I think you had me come over before you got home once, because you were running late from work, and I had to mix the sangria.
Oh yeah, I would always have like a big spread and like snacks and drinks and blah blah blah. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway.
And then by like the fourth episode, no one showed up.
Oh.
So then that ended.
Yeah.
So, but I was brave. I invited people over.
Yes, you were brave.
So, and then the other story that comes to mind, I don't even, like, this story still seems like it didn't actually happen. But there, again, this is me trying to be socialized, reaching out to people. And there were some gays in the community who were sort of, like, not celebrities, but kind of, like, famous in the gay community. They had, like, a pretty big Instagram following, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
They invited me to a birthday party for one of them at their house. They were like, hey, we're having this party, a bunch of people over, you should totally come. I was like, great. And I was like, I'm going to go, and like, I'm going to like meet a bunch of people. And so I went to the party, and I was like, and it was just kind of in their backyard, and there was just like a million gays there. And I was like trying to talk to people and just like put myself out there. And there was like, I really didn't know anybody at the party, except I kind of knew them, and I knew one other guy at the party. Mm-hmm. So I was mostly talking to him, and they were just sort of buzzing around talking to everybody because, you know, they were the ones hosting the party. And I, like, really put myself out there and was trying to, like, chat with people and whatever. And then, like, about an hour and a half into the party, I started, like, having a panic attack.
Did you?
I really did.
Okay.
And I was like, I can't stay here, because I'm going to, like, lose my shit. Mm-hmm. And so I just went, and they also, this couple also had kids, and so I went to them, and I said, hey, I've got to go. Like, I need to go deal with some stuff with my kids. And so they were very kind and very understanding, and were like, oh, my gosh, thanks so much for coming. We totally get it. Like, no big deal. So I left, and then I totally had, like, a meltdown, breakdown in my car. Like, total panic attack. Like, I was crying, and I was freaking out.
Yeah.
Anyway. So it takes, that was a time that I was brave, and then I had a panic attack.
But bravery doesn't always...
No, I know.
...end in a hero story.
No, of course not. And that's why I chose that story. I mean, not because I wanted to end on a depressing note, but yeah, sometimes you're brave and it still doesn't work out.
Yeah.
You know?
And you still... Did you then, and do you now see the value and the bravery of that time?
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine, too.
No, I really do. I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, because, of course, I always assume the worst. And so I feel like me going to that party and then leaving early was more, like, detrimental to my whatever, my social life or my social standing or whatever than had I just not gone at all.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, that's a whole other psychological mess. So here's the thing. Listen. So, well, I don't even know what I don't even know what my wrap up is for this, but basically, like, it was sort of hard to, like, think of these stories because, like, there was a time where I was, like, really trying to meet new people and really trying to put myself out there and really trying to, like, make friends. And I thought, no, I'm going to find, like, my people and blah, blah, blah. And I have a lot of really great friends. Like, I have you and I mean, I have many great friends.
Yeah, you do.
But I do not have any gay friends. Like, basically none.
Interesting.
I mean, I have some that I, like, work with that are, like, acquaintances and whatever and, like, that I'm friendly with. But, like, I don't have any gay friends that I hang out with, like, out, you know, that I, like, go to a movie with or go to a bar with or whatever.
Is that something that disappoints you?
Oh, completely.
Okay.
It's like, yeah, it's a big issue.
All right.
Anyway.
Next week.
next week on Hot Drinks. So anyway, there was a time where I felt like really social and I was like, I'm going to try this. And now I've basically just given up and I'm like, I'm just going to die alone and never have friends.
Because that's what that means.
And I came out of the closet for no reason.
You should go back in.
I mean, I've thought about it.
Well, and go back to Mormon.
I mean, and my mom thinks I'd be happier if I was a Mormon again. So that's something to consider.
Well, anyway.
Let's take a break.
Okay. Light the world.
We're upbeat.
We're going to end
that
it
was
on, a,
fun.
On an upbeat note.
You know what I feel like was a missed opportunity on this episode?
What?
I'm a dad.
Okay.
And there was totally an opportunity to say, one time that I was brave was when my mother turned into a bear and I had to save her using my archery skills and my long red kinky hair. But that's the plot of the movie Brave by Pixar. Oh, like, I totally could have made that joke.
Oh, man. Because
I'm a dad. It's what we do.
You make dad jokes?
Yeah, but I missed that opportunity.
Oh, I didn't even get it.
We have dad bods. Have you not seen the movie Brave by Pixar?
I never saw it.
It had nudity in it.
Really?
Yeah, it showed butts. Animated Pixar butts.
Dudes?
Yes,
dudes?
Of hairy Irishmen.
Scottish?
Hairy Scottishmen. Sorry, Cindy. Anyway, I just felt like that was a missed opportunity. Instead, I told some depressing stories about times I was brave and then hated myself.
The one missed opportunity I thought of was how we didn't reference the band The Bravery, which was one of the bands that got me through some of my depression while I was married.
Oh, I don't know that band.
Okay.
But I do know Pixar's Brave.
Yeah, you do.
Different strokes for different folks.
Different folks. And that rules the world.
Was that the theme song to Different Strokes?
Different strokes to rule the world.
Yes, it was.
Yes,
okay.
It does. Different
anyway.
Strokes to rule the world.
Hey, it turns out sometimes we were brave. And sometimes even being brave was depressing.
The world don't move to the beat of just one drum. It's down, 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 down.
I just went in the background. Anyway, so that's it. Those are five times
that's
we were
it.
Brave.
And you know what? It didn't always turn out like a Hollywood movie.
Are you guys depressed now?
But we bit the bullet.
We did.
As it were.
Speaking of bullets.
Yes, you put them in your butt.
What?
Or your vagina.
What? Bullets?
Yeah, that's a sex toy.
Oh, okay.
Why? What were you going to say?
Well, there's a girl I work with that told me a funny story today that in her family, for Christmas, all the boy cousins get a box of bullets.
Stop.
And all the girl cousins get a box of chocolates. I thought it was...
Kill me.
The funniest thing I'd ever heard. Anyway.
Now. Kill me now.
So we bit the bullet. We did brave things.
And we did brave things. And it... No... And what is it? Outcome be damned. Outcome be damned.
And you know what I've learned from all of this?
Tell me.
I don't want to do brave things anymore.
I thought you were going to say not a goddamn thing. But, no. But I think both apply.
I mean, both apply.
Yeah.
What I've really learned from this is that it's easier to stay safe and not take risks
and become
and not have to be brave.
An alcoholic.
And become a recluse alcoholic like little Edie. I mean, that's the real tea. I said this to a friend tonight. We all love to joke about why I don't go to therapy. But the real reason, when we get really down to it, the real reason I don't go to therapy is because I don't want to, like, that pain is, like, too scary.
You're terrified.
To dig into.
Yeah, you're not brave.
No, not at all.
Yeah,
not at all.
Yeah, well.
I would rather feel, like, a little bit of pain every day than like dig into the really intense pain and then possibly live a happy and fulfilling life. It's just easier to just feel this little bit of self-loathing and pain every day.
Your honesty is so refreshing. And honestly, I think it's why this works.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
Yeah.
It's midnight and one of my kids is texting me to see if they can have more time on their cell phone. And I'm going to text them back and say no more.
You piece of shit.
It's midnight.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway. What do you have to say to wrap up?
Nothing. I want to go home. I've already put my shoes on.
Okay. Okay, great. So just a couple things to wrap up. You can always reach us at hotdrinksforthebelly@gmail.com.
Oh, that. Yeah.
You can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/hotdrinks. Uh-huh. You can follow us on Instagram at hotdrinks. And if you go to Instagram, we have a special feature that we like to feature each week called Things I Found in Brother Coffee's House.
Yeah, and it's always posted by Sister Twaint.
It's about some weird thing that she found in my house.
Yeah, and sometimes it's something that has a practical use, like your ball cream.
Oh, yeah.
And then sometimes it's one of your decor items.
So what are you going to post tonight?
Probably the two male reindeer on your TV stand.
The gay Christmas couple?
Yeah.
One's a reindeer, one's a fox, FYI.
Oh, sorry. I'm going to have them put him in a compromising position.
But like, then, anyway, it's fine. Sister Twain kept trying to put them in a compromising position yesterday. And I was like, you're going to break them. Leave them alone.
I know.
But I bought a little set of woodland creatures. And there's a little couple, a deer couple that's supposed to go together. Uh-huh. And I was like, no, this deer is fucking that fox, who's also a boy.
Yeah.
And the deer lady is over on the other side of the TV.
By herself with her kids.
She has some birds. It's the story of my life. They're birds. They're like her cats. It's a deer lady with some cats. And then the deer man and the fox man that are fucking.
Yeah.
And anyway, Merry Christmas.
Way better than she is, but they that look makes great. Sense.
Yeah, that's true. They took all the money.
Okay. God. All right. Good night.
That's all.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.